The conference is now being recorded.
Wonderful. Good morning. My name is Gloria Spradley Brown, and I am the Bureau Chief for Career and Technical Ed, Grants and Compliance. I will serve as your facilitator today so that we can get through the process of learning information about how to apply for the state appropriation for line item 103, Juvenile Justice Education Program, post-secondary. For those of you that may be familiar with this particular legislation, it's actually a three-part legislation. So this morning at 10 o'clock, we will host the call regarding the post-secondary implementation. And then at 11 o'clock, we will do the GED or high school equivalent. The more appropriate name for this will be the high school equivalent discussion. So at this time, let me give a little, some housekeeping rules, and then we'll go ahead and proceed forward. Because this is a conference call, and we are aware that there will be several people on the line, I ask that you mute your phone immediately, and you can mute your phone by pressing star 6. Even if you're calling in from a cell phone, you still must mute your phones. If you do not mute your phones, then we will be able to hear all of the information. We will be able to hear all of the information in the background. Just one second for me, Georgina. You may want to make a set for, do you have the MOU? Yes. Then a set for me. Okay. I'm going to borrow yours, Jill.
Thank you. I'll make two extras.
Thank you. And thank you guys for that. So as I mentioned earlier, please mute your phone so that we will not hear the background noise. And the way we're going to attempt to do this is I'm going to go through all of the highlights of the MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, first. Then we will open for questions and answers. What we'll try and do is answer as many of those questions that we can within our one-hour time slot. We will be posting questions on our website, those questions that are not easily found in the MOU. I will not post questions that you can read and answer in the MOU, but there may be some questions that perhaps are not as clear in the MOU that we will then post on our website. With that in mind, I'll go ahead and get started. I would like to add that this call is being recorded, and it is our intent to post the recording on our website as well. For those of you that perhaps have other colleagues that are not able to listen in on the call at this time, we will post the recording of this conference call. Again, giving a little background information regarding this particular legislation, some of you are aware that in 2013, Appropriation 103, there was set aside $1.6 million to support juvenile justice education. The proviso was very specific, and it broke down into three different categories regarding this particular appropriation. We're going to address one of those on this particular call. It is our intent to have the MOUs implemented as quickly as possible, and then we are, as stated in the memo, you can go back to July 1 on any applicable student charges that you would like to get reimbursed for. If you have in front of you
Hello?
The MOU, yes. Hello? You should have in front of you, we have provided in the form of the memo announcing this call, a draft of the MOU. And it is a draft because as we are going through our legal office confirming and refining this document, there may be some minor tweaks. I also like to introduce a couple of other people in my room, and I do apologize for not doing that earlier. We have Tara Goodman, who is on the line with us, but she is driving in the car, so she will be participating in the call today. We have our compliance director, Ellen McCarron. She's on the call with us today, and you will see Julie Dillard's name. She is going to be working with me to answer any technical assistance calls you may have regarding the process. And we have several other individuals from the Department of Education. We have Melvin Herron, and we have the Bureau Chief of the Title I program, Sonia Morris, and we also have Jill Nelson, thank you, who's working with our GJJ programs temporarily here in the department. So we have a cadre of people here to assist you and make sure that we get this implemented as efficiently and as quickly as possible. With that being said, I'm simply going to go through the MOU, highlighting those specific areas and points of discussion. Because of this, the set aside, and because of our ability to reimburse you for the cost, as you read in the proviso, it specifically says that the agency will reimburse in all three categories. With that being said, you as the provider will have to spend out the dollars first and then use a system that was created here in the department to receive your reimbursement. And you'll see some specific highlights regarding that process in the MOU. As stated, I am looking at my page one, stated in the terms and effective date. We're going to do everything possible, as stated in the MOU, to have this effective from July 1 to June 30th. Meaning said, if there are any students that are already in your program, any expenditures that are applicable for this particular reimbursement, you will be able to submit those for payment after the MOU agreement has been established. As specified under the payment for the post-secondary, in this particular category, the legislation set aside $512,000 to provide reimbursement for education providers for post-secondary instruction in an accredited state college, college preparation, instruction and testing, or instruction and career and technical ed that leads to industry certification. And I know there may be a host of questions regarding which types of courses are applicable. We try to give you specific information outlined in this MOU, but we will be able at the end of this call to answer any questions. More specifically, the reimbursement shall be up to $2,375 for instruction for each eligible student. And so we'll talk about how we will process that $2,375. Payment for a reimbursement for payment, simply you will enroll the student in the course, or as stated here, there are some situations where the facility, the DJJ facility, may be the instructor provider. It can also be done through virtual online training. So there are multiple ways that you can offer or enroll the student in the course. So regardless of the method that you use to enroll the student in a course or provide the student with the services, you will be allowed to be reimbursed. You have the right here at the department to approve or decline the documentation that you provide to us. You will be required to provide to us evidence that the student is taking the course, enrolled in the course, or being provided the training, the particular post-secondary training that you are requesting reimbursement. And because this is a reimbursement process, you'll hear me say that a number of times throughout this conversation, you will have to demonstrate that you've spent the money, documenting through receipts of payment, and provide us with that information, and we will verify that information and then reimburse you your appropriate funds back. Responsibility, again, as the administrator of this particular set-aside, we are responsible for making sure that we have solid project management and that you have a primary contact here at the department that will be responsible for ensuring that we can quickly and efficiently process your reimbursement, and offer technical assistance. We ask the same of you. We have worked very, very closely with Julie Orange there at the Department of Juvenile Justice, and she has been wonderful providing us with the contact names and numbers of each of the local providers in the three different categories. So we have established a set of names and agencies whom will be eligible for these funds. But we do know that this is an open process, so at any time, Julie may contact us to add additional names, and we will enter MOU agreements as needed. It is important to note that we will enter an agreement with each individual provider. We know that one of the largest private provider, GS4, we will enter into one agreement where they will be responsible for sub-managing all of their private providers. But other than that, each private provider will be responsible to work directly with the department to enter into their respective agreements. As we look at bottom of page 2 of the MOU, top of page 3, again, just talking about the expectations of our providers, making sure that we have a contact person, making sure that you submit your reimbursements timely, make sure that you provide us with adequate and timely student record data, and that, again, we are responsible for making sure that you get your reimbursement. I'm looking at number 6. Number 6 regarding documentation to pay you or to reimburse you for the appropriate dollars. Please be mindful that as we look at number 6, there are three categories that we are willing to reimburse you. First, post-secondary instruction in an accredited state college in Florida. B, college preparation instruction or testing. And C, instruction in career and technical ed that lead to industry certification. So you must ensure that the students are participating in one of those three categories before you will submit your reimbursement. Again, in areas B and C listed above, the post-secondary instruction may be provided directly by the Juvenile Justice Education Program. And we'll speak a little bit more about the evidence of that, and we've had a lot of conversation in how unique and different some of the private providers are when delivering this particular service. So we've tried to include all of those variables as we were writing this particular MOU. And in the third area listed above, the post-secondary instruction may be provided online through a virtual education program. Number 7, we do take in consideration modifications for students with disabilities. Please be minded, we will consider reimbursement for any of those modifications as well. Number 8, instruction provided directly by the Juvenile Justice Education Program must use established post-secondary career technical ed courses and program maintained by the department. We've had a lot of conversation about that as educators and as the administrators of the curriculum frameworks and the industry certification funding list. I know we'll probably have some additional discussion about that, but we have tried to address those issues in number 8 and 9 of the expectations regarding those courses and where you can go to determine whether or not your offering is applicable for this program. If there are any specific situations, we'll probably have to deal with those on an individual basis, but if you look at number 8 and number 9, it should include the majority of your programs and services that you offer, as well as any pre-apprenticeship programs, and some of those, maybe I should say, self-directed or programs that you offer that lead to industry certification. One of the things I want to caution you to, especially if the program, the instruction is being provided by the DJJ program, number 10, in talking to Julie, there are going to be many situations, and we tried to address number 10 by explaining that In the event that you have a student that qualifies for this program and the juvenile justice program is providing its own instruction and you have a mix of students in that program, you have a mix of students in that DJJ class taking the instruction, here's a way that we are recommending that you use to prorate the appropriate amount that should be requested for reimbursement. As I read to you number 10, just for clarification, for instruction provided directly by juvenile justice program, either for post-secondary instruction or college placement testing, the provider must document the monthly expenditures for instruction based on the prorated share of expenses for eligible students. For example, is shown below. First, you need to calculate the total cost of instruction. What's the total cost to offer that instruction? Total cost for instruction is divided by the total number of students in the class. That will yield your per student cost. The first thing we need to understand is the total per student cost. Then once you've determined what the per student cost, then you can calculate the number of eligible students times your per student cost, which will yield the amount you will request for reimbursement. And this was the simplest process that we can derive to help with those mixed classes. You'll find that the further pages in the document are some of those standard contract type of language that you are welcome to have your local and our district procurement office and or attorneys to look at. But we just wanted to remind you about security and confidentiality of the information that the program will be audited. It is up for audit and review either when the AG office comes out to monitor you and or the department. We will be doing some direct monitoring of the programs as we come back to validate that those reimbursement requests that you submitted to us were valid. If you look on page 5, we'll be providing you with the agreement manager. That will be our commissioner will sign here, as well as your agency head. If it's a district, that will be at the superintendent level. If it's a private provider, it will be at your CEO, CFO, the highest person that's responsible for entering contractual agreements for your agency. Again, you'll find on page 6 some of the standard terms and conditions that the department expressed through all of their contractual arrangements and agreement. If you have any specific questions regarding these, please let me know. As well as 7, page 7 talks about the termination, breach of contract, and termination based on convenience. These are, again, standard information and record keeping. You must maintain all records and information regarding any items submitted to the department. Retention there is alpha G, up to 5 years. You must retain it 5 years after the completion and termination of the contract. In the event that we come out and want to take a look at your programs and the student information submitted. I'm going to pause for a moment just to find out if you have any questions regarding specifically to the MOU. Once I've addressed questions regarding the MOU, then I'd like to go over the reimbursement process and some of the forms that we've created. And we've created a website that you can go out to from our division page and pull down this information.
Are you taking questions now?
I'm taking questions at this time. If you would be so kind to give me your name so I'll know the program, your name and the program that you represent, that will help me out a lot. So okay. I'm open for questions.
Yeah, this is Peter Plant with Jeep Rescue Services. Let me ask you a question on page 6.
Yes.
number five. And let me give you an example. Let me give you an example of what I'm going to talk about. We are able to enroll a student prior to June 30th, 2014, and all of the reimbursable costs, such as registration and course tuition and so forth, would be paid for prior to June 30th, 2014. But the course itself extends beyond June 30th, 2014. That is, the student is still taking the course, although there are no further payments. This says to complete this agreement, all services must be performed prior to June 30th, 2014. Is that meant to prohibit any continuation of a course, even after all of the costs have been reimbursed, after June 30th, 2014?
That's a valid question, and that may be one that I need to follow up on. Again, we only have access to the dollars through a certain time frame, as you are familiar with state funds. Even though June 30th is our cut date for enrollment, we only have a short period of time to liquidate and pay out all of the reimbursements. So this statement was written in regards to ensure that you receive payment for those students, those applicable students. But I would rather clarify that question and give you a written response with that. But it is of my opinion that we are concerned with ensuring that your reimbursement, that you get reimbursement costs for the students, even though the course may go beyond the June 30th timeframe.
Okay, that's understood. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Peter. Do we have any other questions regarding the MOU and any sections within the MOU?
Yes, this is Paula Kozelka from the Okaloosa County DJJ Schools. Does the reimbursement for Category 1 include textbooks?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. If you go out and take a look at the reimbursement form, I think we have a section there, and someone is running to get me a screenshot of the form itself for those other costs. But that's a good question. I'll make sure that I put that one in the Q&A. But it's what the student would need to be enrolled and to complete that course.
Very good.
Good morning. This is Tadar Muhammad with HBI.
Yes. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for asking. A quick question regarding additional certifications, meaning that a student is enrolled in an HBI program and has achieved his pre-apprenticeship certification, but desires to take an additional course of some sort. I just want to make sure or ask the question as to whether that is covered under this MOU.
Okay. What is most specific about the MOU is the cost. We can only reimburse you up to $2,375 per student, which means if a student enrolled into a particular HBI course or instruction and that first enrollment yields only $1,000 in reimbursement, then we will reimburse you that $1,000. If it's within the time frame of the MOU and the customer and the student need to enroll in a second course or a second component, we still can reimburse you up to $1,375 for a total reimbursement for that one student of $2,375. So does that answer your question?
Absolutely.
And we are fully aware that in enrolling some of the students in the program or providing instruction, it will not yield the $2,375 initially, depending on the level and the type of instruction. So as long as that student, that one student, And we will be keeping records here at the department to determine whether or not that individual student has gone over and beyond the 2,375. And it may help if we now go to the reimbursement process. And again, we do have a website, and we did not include the website on the memo announcing this meeting, but I can give you the information as to how to get to that website. If you will go to the Florida Department of Education's homepage, www.fldoe.org, to the left side, you'll see a click for Career and Adult Education. It'll be on the left side. If you click on that, you will then be on Chancellor Duckworth's homepage. On the left side, toward the middle of the page, you'll see a link reads Juvenile Justice State Appropriation. If you click on that link, you'll find all of the information that we've shared today. You'll see some background information. You'll find the draft MOUs. And further down the page, you'll find reimbursement instructions. And when you click on the reimbursement instructions, the first thing you'll see is a set of instructions, which I'm about to go over, how to request your reimbursements. And you'll see a form. We have created a system, a web system. It's part web and part you have to submit to us, that we can simplify the process and keep accurate records on those students and programs submitting reimbursement. So because we're discussing the post-secondary instruction component, you will click on the post-secondary instruction student data form. When you open that form, you'll see that the information first, the first set of information that we're requesting would be provider information, your agency, your MOU contract number, and the residential facility location and the residential program number. We'll then ask for specific student information, first and last name, date of birth, and working again with Julie Orange, we are aware that there is a juvenile justice ID number for each student. And as you're familiar with the post-secondary instruction component, there are three different ways you can provide instruction or offer instruction for the student. If you're doing the state college, there's a section there. If you're doing college prep and testing, there's a section there. Or instruction that's leading, that's offered by the provider. And I think one of the questions asked about tuition and instructional costs, you'll see that you are then to write in what the tuition and fees, any instructional costs. You will come up with the total. And then you are able to upload in the system your documentation to support the reimbursement amount that you are requesting. So at each individual student level, you then, using the select file, you are to upload the proof, because the requirement is that the student must bestow a high school diploma or its equivalent. And then, so you will give us evidence of that. You will give us evidence of the type of instruction you've enrolled the student in and the evidence of your payment, cost and payment that you've paid out for that student. And then you hit submit. To follow that up in writing, because we must have a signed document in writing, you are simply to go over to the invoice form. So for each student, you will complete the student data form. Upload the appropriate documentation for each student. Following that, you will then go to the invoice form. The invoice form is pretty much a summary of all students that you are requesting invoice reimbursement for that one reimbursement, for that one invoice. So each time you submit a different invoice, you have to go through this process. So we have prepared the student data record form so for three students, as an example, three students. You've completed the student data form. Now we move over to the invoice form. You'll see a drop-down menu so that you can select which of the three categories you're requesting reimbursement. Again, we're going back to the contract MOU or grant number, your agency and facility address, phone number, email. Here's where we're going to list those students. You're going to list the name of the students that you've uploaded the data, the amount for each student. Then at the bottom, you'll give us a total of the amount that you're requesting for that one invoice and sign it. This you will submit in the system as well as print, sign, and send it to us. This is the only document that you will be mailing to the department. In the instruction page, we provide for you the address that you should mail this one signed document. You will submit it, then you will print it, then we will need an original signature. This is the one document that we must have an original signature. And you will send that to the department to the address specified in the instruction. Once we receive that, as the administrators of the management system, we're able to go into each of the individual student data forms, retrieve your submission, retrieve your upload, your attachment, and your documentation, and we will process the request. That's why you'll see in this invoice form, DOE approved. As stated in the MOU, we reserve the right to reject submissions that we do not receive adequate documentation and or receipts. So you will send this to us, we will review it, approve it, process it through our finance comptroller's office. Payment will be dispersed to you through our department and the DFS system. Are there any questions regarding how reimbursement will take place?
Yes, ma'am, I have one question. This is Dr. Zuli. I'm Assistant Director for Education for G4S.
Okay.
And I've been the principal here prior for about 8 years, and a lot of times our students who come in to the school with GEDs, we assign them to a class where there are other regular high school students attending.
Yes.
So their instructor is really certified by the county or the state, and they're receiving instruction from that instructor.
And that is correct.
And we're paying the instructor. I'm looking at the forms for the reimbursement form. I don't see a place where it says instructor costs.
Okay. If you go back to the MOU, and we talked about, and I'm going to go back, I think it was numbers, let me get to the correct MOU, if you guys know which number it is. 10 for calculation.
Yes, ma'am.
We want you to do that calculation ahead of time. We want you to do the calculation on the per student cost. We cannot pay the full fee of that instructor, but what we can pay is the pro rata share of the eligible student. So if you go to the MOU page 4, number 10, I think that may answer your question, and that we are aware that students will be in mixed classrooms. And this was our approach to ensure that we are only paying our proper portion for those mixed classrooms.
Right. And for the invoice itself, would that go under curricula?
It will go under, are we looking at the student record form?
I'm looking at the student data collection form.
It will go under prep instruction. Prep instruction.
Prep instruction, okay.
Right, and if you go to page 2, you have two sections that are either going to be prep instruction or going to be instruction leading to industry certification, depending on which category it falls in. And then if you flip to the lower part of that, I know you don't call it tuition and fees, but it will be instructional costs on the form. You will write it in the instructional costs.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome, sir. Are there any other questions regarding this particular process? Again, I appreciate. Yes.
This is Jeff McSpadden with Twin Oaks Juvenile Development. Just wanted to clarify.
I'm sorry, you said Jeffrey?
Jeff McSpadden.
Jeff, okay.
Yes. You mentioned that the pre-calculation of the prorated share for each individual student. Is that calculation documentation going to be submitted with each youth that's requested? So every time that same document, if we just create one standardized document, we resubmit that document?
Yes.
Okay.
Again, we know that we have several different variables that we must take into consideration. We've spent a lot of hours and time working with Julie and talking with others to try and make sure that this process is sound and that we can be accountable to our legislators and stakeholders here in Florida to ensure that we are reimbursing appropriately for all eligible costs. Are there any other questions regarding this particular process?
This is Jeff again. I did have just one more question for clarity. What is the feedback loop for amounts that are not approved
when
DOE reviews them?
Excellent. We will have a designated contact person here. Again, you'll find that I'll play an active role as the Bureau Chief. I'll play an active role in making sure that we get you timely responses back, but we do have contact persons here that will be offering direct technical assistance. That's why we're asking for your agency name, contact number, so that we know whom to call back and let you know whether or not a particular student's documentation was sufficient. And again, Jeff, it is our desire to pay the money. We want you to get the money. So we'll work with you if there's additional documentation that you can expeditiously get to us. We will definitely work with you to try and get that additional information. Our goal is to get you the money. It's not our intent to return any back to the legislature. We want to show them that we need the money. This money is necessary for our students in the DJJ education program. So we'll do every attempt to make sure that you can get reimbursed for those funds. Are there any other questions? I'll pause for a moment and allow the people here in the department. Did I leave off anything? Any additional comments, concerns? Ellen?
Sure. Hi, everyone. Back on the MOU, when we were having the discussion walking through it, we came to the section on agreement management where we are designating the points of contact for each entity entering into the contract. For the Department of Education, I believe Gloria mentioned it would be the commissioner, but actually the commissioner is the one who signs the document.
Thank
on
you.
The last page. In this section, we will give you a contact, and when you get your contract, you will see that contact person and all of the information necessary, and that is whom you will communicate with for any of your MOU and needs.
Thank you, Ellen, for that clarification. Also, if possible, I'm going to ask Ellen to stay close by the phone. I'd like for her to recap the three questions that I think we're going to post some follow-up to make sure that we've captured your concerns. I'll go around to Chief
Morris? None? Melvin?
First come, first serve.
Thank you. Yeah, Melvin wanted to make sure that I reiterate that it is first come, first serve. As you are aware, the appropriation specifies a specific amount per category. So in this particular category, we're only dealing with $512,000. So I strongly encourage you to get your request in, because when the money runs out, we do not have the authorization to take dollars from any other category to subsidize this one. So it is strictly based on the amounts outlined there in proviso. So thank you for that, Melvin. To reiterate, it is a first come, first serve basis. With that said, I'll just ask Ellen to kind of go back over the, I think it's two or three questions that we will be posting on Q&A to ensure that we have clearly captured all of your requests and questions. Ellen?
Gloria.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to ask one other question. This is Tadar with HBI.
Yes.
Regarding number 9 on the MOU, where it specifically states, included are examinations that are part of a pathway to the final certification and pre-apprenticeship programs. I just want to make sure if you could just clarify the intent behind those additional certifications. Are those the ones that you referenced that were agreed upon with DJJ as well as DOE that may not be a part of the comprehensive industry certification list?
Tara Goodman, are you still on the line with us? Giving her a moment to unmute her phone. Tara?
Hey, Gloria. Sorry, I had a couple of mutes going on. Can you repeat the question?
Yes, I was asking about question number 9 on the MOU, where it specifically talks about the instructions that lead to the instruction certification, industry certifications. And it speaks to also included are the examinations that are a part of the pathway to the final certification and pre-apprenticeship programs. I just wanted to make sure that if I understood that correctly, those were in addition to those programs that may not be on the comprehensive industry certification list at this time, but were the ones that were also included in terms of being a pre-apprenticeship program, particularly with the Department of Juvenile Justice, like HBI.
Well, I believe in that section, I do not have that language with me on this trip, there is a specific reference to how pre-apprenticeship programs are included in the eligibility. Gloria, can you read that paragraph specifically?
And you are correct, Tara, and I will read it. Also included as examinations that are part of the pathway to the final certification and pre-apprenticeship program, the provider will document which industry certification are part of the post-secondary instructional program and the application for reimbursement.
Is that part of the MOU?
Yes, it's number 9 in the MOU. It leaves out with the citation as to where to find the industry certification funding list or the comprehensive industry certification list. So it says instructions that lead to industry certification shall include programs that include training toward the attainment of an industry certification on the 2013-14 industry certification funding list or the 2013-14 comprehensive industry certification list. These lists may be found, and we provided them with the link for both lists. Then it proceeds on with also included our examinations that are a part of.
The bottom line, if you find that language confusing, the intent was to include pre-apprenticeship programs in the eligibility. Obviously, you know, pre-apprenticeship programs lead to statewide apprenticeship programs that have the ultimate industry certification in the form of what they do. So none of that should be interpreted any way to exclude pre-apprenticeship programs from the eligibility.
And again, Tara, it does state that. It does state, and pre-apprenticeship program. So if we need to do a little tweaking with that, we have no problem in doing so. but the language does include that.
Right. The only thing that I was concerned about, it specifically talks about examinations. So I just wanted to make sure that I understood what that specifically meant. But I think
so
I'm pretty good.
So with clarification, examination and instruction, would that help?
Yes, that would be very helpful.
Okay, not a problem. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll just get Ellen to recap those few questions, and then we will proceed with concluding the call. Ellen?
Okay. And by the way, thank you for these questions. They're very helpful and will lead us to go back to the MOU and make a few tweaks. So thank you for these questions. The first one I noted was what to do about a course that continues past June 30, 2014. We'll need to get back to you on that. We don't want to give you any wrong information or information that would be not in accordance with our contracting, so we will get back to you on that one. Another question pertained to whether or not textbooks would be reimbursable. The answer is yes, they will be, and we went over the invoice form where you can show that in instructional costs section of invoice. Another question was, could students' reimbursement be split if they had multiple courses? And Gloria's answer was yes, remembering that the maximum is $2,375 per student, but you may invoice separately if you have two reimbursement requests that add up to $2,375. Another question was what to do about teacher costs and how to invoice for them. Teacher costs are certainly, you want to pay your instructors in accordance with the methodology that was described where you prorate the number of students in the class as to the eligible students, and that would be the basis of your reimbursement for instructional costs, and that would also go in the instructional costs box on the invoice. And another question was what to do about if any of your requests for reimbursement were not honored in full. The contact person would certainly be back in touch with you about any portions of an invoice that may be denied or need additional documentation for those. So that would be handled through the points of contact on the MOU. Of course, the final question that we discussed was whether or not pre-apprenticeship program instruction and exams would be eligible. They are. We're going to tweak the wording to make that more clarify it better.
Did I leave off any concerns or questions? Well, again, I'd like to thank you all on behalf of our chancellor and our commissioner. We want to thank you for allowing us to administer this particular fund source. If you have any questions, again, Gloria Spratley Brown and or Julie Dillard, we will be able to assist you with any calls. Again, thank you, and we will be working directly with each provider to enter into the MOU agreement, so you'll hear from us on an individual basis. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.
You too, sir.